Hi, I'm the Strategist Cowboy. This week's first contestant is a Norwegian Pale Ale from the Lervig Brewery located in Stavanger, Norway. The second contestant is a lager beer from the Swedish city of Malmö in Scania, Hugga Bugga. The beer has got a football-oriented name, football as in European football. The beer's names are Lucky Jack Grapefruit from the Norwegian brewery Lervig, VS 79 from the Scanian Sibabs Husbryggeri.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Our first contestant this week is the Lucky Jack Grapefruit Pale Ale from Lervig Brewery in Stavanger in southwest Norway at the southern coast. The Lervig Brewery is a joint stock corporation brewery. The ingredients in Lucky Jack are water, barley malt, hops, grapefruit concentrate, natural flavor, and yeast. The malts are of the sorts Pilsner and Caramel. The hops are of the American sorts Amarillo, Chinook, and Citra. The yeast is American ale yeast. The natural flavor is grapefruit juice, of course. The best before date on this particular beer is May 2024. Today it is mid-December 2023. The Lucky Jack beer assortment comes in a size 33 centiliters, i.e. an about 11 liquid ounces can. The can depicts a circle containing an old-time sailor with a fishing cap and sunglasses, watching the ocean and holding a fishing net over his shoulder. The lower part of the can is the ocean, and the upper part is the sky shining in red. The Lucky Jack cost me 26 kronor at Systembolaget. That is $2.55. That is 93 cents per every 4 ounces of beer. According to Systembolaget, the preferred serving temperature on this beer assortment is 10 to 12 degrees Celsius, i.e. about 50 to 54 degrees Fahrenheit. The Lucky Jack Grapefruit has got a 4.7% ABV level. 4.7%. How about the experience then? Okay, let's see here. If it's gonna squirt all over me, or if it's gonna be okay. It's okay. Yeah. It's one moment. It's got about a 2 fingers tall head, or 1.5 fingers perhaps. Let's see, 2 fingers almost. And it's yellow in color, cloudy, very cloudy. I can't see my fingers through the glass. Well, it was a grapefruit aroma, and it's a grapefruit taste. But it's not sweet, so they haven't spiced it up with some sugar. It's very dry or bitter, in some sense, like a grapefruit bitter. It's almost like they have removed some fruit sugar from it instead of adding it. Anyway, first impression is it's a good beer. It's usually my first impression, so I don't know. Let's see. Is it rich? Yes, it is pretty rich for a 4.5% beer. Or what was it? 4 point. Anyway, 4.7%, so a little bit lower than regular. 5%. But it's that's for a lager beer, so this is an ale, so it's pretty low. But it still tastes good. You don't have to have a high ABV level for a beer to taste good. Doesn't necessarily have to have a high ABV level. So it's not bread-like. It's not yeasty. It doesn't taste like a pale ale at all, actually. Perhaps malty, but it more grapefruit taste. Excuse me. So pretty high carbonation level, I guess. Taste on my palate. Well, it's mostly grapefruit, but on my palate it doesn't taste so much grapefruit as it does on my tongue. It probably got some spices in it, yeah. And it's fruity, of course, grapefruity. Carbonation level was pretty high, I said that. It's not creamy. It's not acidic. And there are not really any aberrations in it. There are not any aberrations because the taste, the flavors are supposed to be there as intended, not like pine needle-like taste. Like it's just something that happens when you brew the beer, and then you call it something elaborate, like something good for the beer, but it's not. It's just a side effect of making beers when you're unlucky or unskilled. Is it filtered or unfiltered? I would say that it's not very filtered, but not really unfiltered, I guess. I don't know, but since there's only one prevalent flavor in it, like grapefruit, I cannot say that it's well balanced or not. And there's a perhaps a balance between the grapefruit and the spices. I'd say that I can't really say that it's well balanced, but it's not well. It's not well balanced. Let's see here if there's any more flavors in it. If there are any more flavors in it. No, not really. Honey, perhaps? No. No, I don't think there's any more flavors in it but this grapefruit flavor. and some spiciness. It doesn't really taste like a real beer, but it's not a bad beer. I mean, it's a beverage, and it's more a beer than a beverage, actually, but not quite a beer, but it is a beer. So if you get my point, my drift. What about grading then? How many devils do I grade this beer? I wish it would have been more sweet, since it's a grapefruit beer. Pale ale. I don't think it tastes like a pale ale. But, well, I think that... I wish it was more sweet, a sweeter beer. So I grade this beer 5, 6 devils out of 10 possible. I don't know which actually, but I think I'm going to label it or give it 5 devils out of 10 possible, because I don't think it's a bad beer, but it's not my kind of beer, if I say that. So, okay, let's move on to our next contestant. Our second contestant for this week is the sport referenced 79 from Sibarps Husbryggeri in Malmö. Sibarp being a famous beach, perhaps a short strip of land. Husbryggeri means house brewery. It is a light lager beer, as it should be, since it has got a sport reference for our name. Let me explain. Even though the color of this beer is said to be gold by the brewery, it actually refers to a silver place that the local football team Malmö FF was honored with in the European Cup in 1979. After losing the finals against Nottingham Forest FC, an English team, the friggin' English. But since I'm not a sports fan of any sort, I had to look it up. I'm all into strategy and war. I do know what it means to cheer for a team. War is the ultimate sport, you could say. Football, what is that? A child's play. The ingredients in this beer assortment are water, barley malt, wheat malt, hops, and yeast. The best before date on this particular beer is June 2024. At present date, it is mid-December 2023. The 79 lager beer assortment comes in a size 50 centiliters, i.e. an about 17 liquid ounces bottle. The bottle is in Malmö FF's colors, white and light blue. Suits the light beer. The 79 beer assortment from Sibarps Husbryggeri in Malmö cost me 31 kronor, i.e. $3. That is 70 cents per every 4 ounces of beer. This lager beer surely cannot be of great quality, can it? Though it'd be bad for the fans if it wasn't. A kick in the teeth. According to Systembolaget, the preferred serving temperature on 79 is between 8 to 10 degrees Celsius, i.e. about 46 to 50 degrees Fahrenheit. The brewery says nothing about preferred serving temperatures. The beer assortment has got a 5% ABV. 5%. How about the experience then? One moment, I'd better open this beer up, and I'm curious how this MFF beer could taste. Pretty weak aroma, But lager aroma, if anything. As it should be, but it shouldn't be weak in aroma. In the aroma. Anyway, it's got about a one finger tall head, so it's not much. And it's a little bit cloudy, actually, even though it's a lager beer. Pretty much cloudy. I can see my fingers through the glass, but they're very blurry. And it's yellow. It's not golden in color. It's more yellow. Silvery yellow. Hehe. Anyway. Typical lager beer aroma. Not very significant aroma. It's not very, it's a weak aroma. First impression is that it's a good lager beer. I should hope so. They disappoint their fans if it wasn't. But it's not the MFF that brews this beer, I guess. Just some diehard fan. It's if it's not rich, it's certainly not weak. For a lager beer, it's pretty rich. It's not exactly bread-like. And it's not yeasty. It's malty. Taste on my palate is malt. Which is perfectly normal for a lager beer. Is it sweet or dry? Well, it's somewhere in between. More dry than sweet. Is it bitter or hoppy? I'd say that it is fairly bitter, not very hoppy. It's not candy-like, of course. Is there any fruitiness in it? It's even more cloudy now. Can barely see my fingers through the glass. I have never heard of a cloudy lager beer, but perhaps I have, but I can't recall one. But it's not bad, it's good. It's got some spicy taste in it, perhaps. Carbonation level. I guess it's, I don't know actually, not yet. It's not creamy. It's not acidic, and let's see here. It's got some pine needle aberration, but it's not really that much. I mean, it's a lager beer. What can you expect? Often they have a pine needle taste. Anyway, it's light roasted, of course. And I guess it's unfiltered to some degree. I don't know But certainly you can't see your fingers through the glass almost. No, I can't. It's more golden now, but still more yellow than golden. Is it well balanced or not? Well, I don't know actually if it's balanced or not, but anyway, let's see if there are any more flavors in it. There is a little bit of pine needle, but it's also some kind of straw-like taste. And I prefer the straw-like taste before the pine needle taste. And let's see here. I actually don't sense much of the wheat malt. Most of the barley malt is... I sense the barley malt. But not so much the wheat malt. Let's see here. It's straw-like, as I said. But it's not honey-like like they claim. At least it's not syrup in it. There's no syrup in it. I don't think so, anyway. And that's a good thing. Danish beers are lousy. Danish lager beers. Mostly. Since they got syrup in their beers. Anyway... there's nothing more to say about this beer, actually. Okay, what about grading then? How many devils do I grade this beer? Well, good question. It's one of the better lager beers, but not the best at all. But it's on the upper side. The upper level of grading. So I grade this beer. For a lager beer, I grade it 6 or 7 devils out of 10 possible. For a lager beer, 7 devils out of 10 possible. For a beer, 6 devils out of 10 possible. Okay. Absolutely don't drink and operate heavy machines. Military or civilian. Drink responsibly or not at all. Don't drink at all if you're underage or pregnant. How far does Israel's mobilization cover? Some might say that I'm too overwhelmingly on Israel's side in the conflict between Israel and Palestine. But the thing is that the Palestinians don't come out with reports that can be taken seriously, but are constantly producing fake news that cannot be trusted. And they don't produce any books of quality about their history. So the only sources of quality are Israeli sources. This means that the Palestinians can suit themselves if we in the surrounding world have to rely on Israeli sources to create an image in our heads about the ongoing conflict. It may sound harsh, but it is merely a matter of reality. I urge the Palestinians to start producing books of quality in English, lest the world won't have to rely on solely Israeli sources. It is my advice to the Palestinians. If I personally had quality information coming from the Palestinian side, I might seriously consider my stance on the conflict. But I guess it isn't macho enough to write and read books, is it now? Books are always biased, we know that. But it is allowed, because it is how we humans function. Lies and history revisionism are, however, not allowed. But I guess it is going to be difficult for any Palestinian to write a truthful pro-Palestinian book about the ongoing conflict if they have to start, complete, or finish the book with the words, "Hamas attacked Israeli civilians, raped, burned them alive, put babies in the oven and fired it up, mutilated women, etc." Israel has recently mobilized 300,000 men and women in the armed forces. Israel borders Gaza with 60 kilometers, Lebanon with 49 kilometers, and Syria borders the Golan Heights with maybe 1,800 kilometers. This means, in principle, that Israel has got about 150 soldiers deployed and divided per square kilometer along its borders. Except for Jordan and Egypt, who are more or less domesticated by now. If you count the maybe 4,000 kilometers to the West Bank, should Israel somehow be able to evacuate the 700,000 Israelis inside the West Bank and Jerusalem if there is a major, however improbable, attack on Fatah's behalf, then there are only about 50 Israeli soldiers per every square kilometer along the line in total. If we instead calculate with an Israeli defense only around the densely populated region of Gush Dan, an area with 4 million plus inhabitants, including the region with the city of Tel Aviv in Israel's central west, the lines would become maybe 1,800 kilometers long, plus the other 1,909 kilometer borders to Gaza, Lebanon, and Syria, equaling 3,709 kilometers. Then there are about 80 soldiers per kilometer along the line in total. Of course, in reality, there are multiple other factors to weigh in. One is that Israel probably won't have to cover every inch of border due to obstacles like physical land barriers or advantageous Israeli positioning. Another is that soldiers aren't just deployed evenly distributed along the borders. They are grouped together and have different types of vehicles with different purposes. And another is that the IDF isn't dispersed out evenly, but is deployed for a concentrated attack on a few locations, as is probably Israel's enemies. And another is that, say, one third of the Israeli army is logistics, and any army with much less logistics than this is crap. Most important, the ability to supply the vehicle units as they advance is crucial. The Israelis probably cannot manage this alone in a further war well into Syria, but they need the masters of logistics, the US, to be able to manage that. And another is the composition of the Israeli units and the enemy units. Part of it is the very important Israeli Air Force. Another most important factor is troop mobility in a short amount of time. Yet another is the superiority of the Israeli electronic countermeasures and electronic counter-countermeasures, which are going to win battles against an enemy state actor to a low, low cost in human resources. Aside from all this, there is the quality in the cognitive field of everyone, from the people in the intelligence service to the private soldier, to the general. And a lot more is involved that doesn't factor in directly with the front line, if you want to call it that. How many tank shells in stock does Israel have? There are supposedly about 360 built Merkava 4 tanks, and the US is now supplying Israel with 45,000 shells, according to the online news channel World Israel News on the 10th of December 2023. That makes up 125 shells per tank. It's not that much, but consider the low number of tanks that Hamas can conceivably have, like zero. The Lebanese armed forces has got maybe 270 operational tanks. Hezbollah has got a few captured Israeli tanks they cannot maintain. Israel is possibly stocking up for a tank war with Iranian forces. 14,000 of the tank shells, or about 38 shells per tank, are for immediate delivery. The sale will be from US Army inventory and consist of 120mm M830A1 high explosive anti-tank multi-purpose with tracer, MPAT, tank cartridges and related equipment. So not very surprising. They do say multi-purpose. 38 tank shells are not very much in the long run. They can't go around and shoot them off at random. 125 tank shells per tank will maybe suffice for 100 plus days of continued war in Gaza. Thus, the Israeli leadership may be looking ahead at 4 months of continued land war. They do want some shells remaining in stock, but they presumably had some shells in stock when the war started. Thank you for the info. Conspiring on Earth, a crime in Iran. As for the imprisoned Swede in Iran, Johan Floderus, who now is accused of conspiring on Earth, a crime in Iran that gives the penalty of death. We can only close the Swedish embassy in Tehran and thereafter shut down the Iranian embassy in Stockholm with brute force if necessary. It is the only thing the Iranians fear from us Swedes. We owe it to Johan Floderus. But Roger, diplomacy is our only tool for getting Johan Floderus out of Iran. Diplomacy with Iran obviously doesn't work. He's going to hang anyway. But Roger, human relations are so important. If we don't have anyone to talk with in Iran, we'll perish. Get a grip on yourself. Are you men or mice? You can always say to the Iranian regime that if they play nice and release Johan Floderus, they can come back to their embassy in Stockholm, unless we have to shoot our way into the embassy. This suggestion, if realized, will serve as a warning to Russia and their embassy in Stockholm, and it may affect their efficacy as a spy center. But Roger, what about international treaties? Yes, what about them? Hanging an innocent Swede for a bogus crime doesn't violate international treaties? But I guess that the US will get the last Swedish word, and they will probably replace the government of Utrikesdepartementet's megaphone. And the US doesn't want Sweden to close the Swedish embassy in Tehran. We have become complete and utter nothingness. But Roger, what shall we do about the fact that Iran has postponed the trial and may pardon Johan Floderus from the death penalty if and only if the Iranian allegedly human rights violator Hamid Nouri gets off scot-free in the upcoming court verdict here in Sweden? I figure there is no way to save Johan Floderus without selling our soul to the devil. The judiciary court in Sweden cannot be allowed to be influenced by the clergymen in Iran. We cannot afford it. Therefore, Johan Floderus is going to die. Unless we call their cards and shut down the Iranian embassy in Sweden, after we have called home every Swede that hears our cry inside Iranian borders. But Roger, that kind of politics never works. Aren't you being unrealistic? I am sorry. Do your tested policies work on a dictatorial theocracy, you say? Don't sell them even a paperclip. We'll see who is dependent on who. Unless you're already 100% subordinate to the US sanctions against Iran. And the sources for this were Real Life Lore on YouTube and World Israel News and Eser Ekut. A continuation on the Guyana case. In January 2018, an estimated 3.2 billion barrels of oil were found offshore, and Guyana was scheduled to become a petroleum producer by March 2020. It is not very much in the long run. The Venezuelan neighbor's oil reserves are 300 billion barrels. So why is Nicolas Maduro so obstinate that he wants to invade Guyana over Guyana's oil reserves? Probably because he is ignorant. But there could be other factors. Like he is seeing a new dawn for the axis of even worse evils. China, Russia, Iran, and all of them. This would make him a player among them. He may already know that the US wants to start a war in the Middle East. He may be counting on that it would be a tiny bit too much for the US to now invade his country of Venezuela. And he wants to expand his influence in the process of weakening the US. The Chinese have pulled out of the project, knowing that the Venezuelan oil reserves are much vaster, thereby empowering Nicolas Maduro's empire-building ambitions. China is going for broke. So much for that. But what are the Guyanans thinking? They may be aware that their oil won't suffice for long and that an oil economy is not always good. However, Guyana's president Irfan Ali recently spoke up and said this, quote, "The independent review by Norway has pointed to this project as being good for Guyana, being good for the environment, and bringing greater prosperity, so this project will get underway." End quote. Irfan Ali used the words "being good for the environment," so he was clearly referring to the much anticipated US-supported construction of the hydroelectric power plant they have sought after for so long, the so-called Amelia Falls project. And that was also Norway's point. The cost for building this power plant is estimated to be $840 million. The oil revenues are estimated to be $160 billion over the next 20 years. That is $8 billion per year, or $2,200,000 per day, a mere $2.75 per every person per day in Guyana. Except some of the oil will probably stay in Guyana, and then it will become an expenditure that will easily eat up the extra money for the citizens of Guyana. The revenues, however, are probably earmarked for other infrastructural projects in Guyana, unless it disappears into the pockets of the ruling class. Going by the numbers, the US clearly calculates with a world market oil price of $50 per barrel for the next 20 years. That is interesting. Thank you for the info. ExxonMobil is on top of it though, and a 227 kilometers gas pipeline and a natural gas combined cycle plant in the vicinity of Georgetown is already under construction. Georgetown is located by the coastline. The source for this was VisualPolitik on YouTube. My name is Roger Klein. Thank you and see you later, alligator. At a while, crocodile.